Welcome to GNT. Today, Warren Buffett is investing in Apple. Google has dropped their new AI, and we have a great Star Wars movie coming. We're about to talk about it all. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives, Geek Nerd Tech. This is America.
Woo! Don't get you slipping now. Welcome to Black Hollywood Live. This is Geek Nerd Tech, also known as GNT, where we break down the best technology, geek, and popular culture there is in the land. I'm Akili Shine, your host, and I'm here with my man Joe Braswell.
What's up?
Yes, sir. We back in the building, man.
Back in the building.
All right. Hey, man, we got a lot to cover today. I say we just jump right into it.
Let's do it.
Before we do that, man, that song, man.
Yes.
This is America.
Yes.
Childish Gambino.
Yes.
You see the video?
Of course.
What you think?
I did a rare Instagram post about it.
Rare.
I did like a Steve Barry type post. It's like, Childish Gambino is a genius.
I missed that post. Like you did like a write up.
I posted a clip from the video, and I said because when it dropped like that same day, it sent it live. It was just everyone was posting about going nuts about it. Everybody's doing this, but I gotta do it too.
Right.
Like he is the personification of the word artist. Like he is really coming with it, and you know he's a true polymath. And in this all this talk and well, the word genius is being thrown around, and hate to sort of. Had a tough to drag Kanye into this, but like, you know, the timing with Kanye's meltdown and the rise of Gambino is like, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree.
He's the best TV show on right now and super creative off, you know, TV show. He's got music that's crazy, and he's fucking Lando Calrissian.
And you forgot two other things. He's also on The Lion King. He's doing stage.
That's right. He's on Lion King.
And he has his own, I don't know if it's going to go, but he had his own animation. He was doing Deadpool for Fox.
Yeah.
It got canceled.
And then also, by the way, he wrote for 30 Rock and started in Community.
Exactly. I mean, I think his rise is incredible. I mean, from a guy that was just, you know, like you just said, had a small role in a TV show, but now being expansive in all these different categories and like killing it in his own way. Like he's not a carbon copy. Like he's literally, it's his own DNA in each of the things that he does. And I think that's really impressive. And I love the fact that he took such a risk with this concept and dealing with these issues almost at the height of his career. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't see artists that really do that. And the fact that he did it in a very like simplistic way, like the lyrics of the song aren't in your face.
Right.
Like even, I mean, it's all visuals. It's all symbols.
Man, it's all symbols.
And it's communicating to us on so many levels.
Yeah.
It's dope, man.
And directed by his boy Hero, who's his partner on
Atlanta.
And yeah, I just got to say one thing that just is sort of a bit of a mea culpa on my part. I remember him coming up, and I was really one of those dudes who every step of the way, and I was a Donald Glover fan. I love Community, you know. I love Troy. I loved you know his early improv stuff, but I thought every step of the way, Community. I'm like, oh, this is what he should be doing because he's a sketch comedy guy, kind of on the fringe, kind of a hipster sketch comedy. This makes sense.
Yeah.
And then when it was like, oh, by the way, he's putting out an album. I was like, wait, what? He's trying to rap? Nah, he can't rap. Like, why is he trying to rap?
Right,
like,
right.
Troy from Community?
Right.
Like, he ain't even like that. Like, we trying to rap.
Yeah.
And then, like, he had a stand-up special on the Showtime. Like, he got a stand-up special, an hour. He can't know. He know Richard Pryor.
Man.
Like, he can't do that. Like, he can't rap, and he can't do the stand-up.
And he did it.
And then it was like, oh, and by the way, he's quitting Community. I'm like, to do what? Focus on his music? Good luck with that, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wrong on every front.
And I think that's the cool thing about him is that I think a lot of artists literally are cookie cutters. They you know, essentially put in the program. It's formulaic. They do what's in the landscape versus him. Like, okay, this is the landscape. I'm going to do something completely different. And that's why it works, because no one's doing that. Like, no one's like a true identity. And like, he has his own identity. And so I think it's refreshing. It's like, it's even though it's like sometimes weird or it's different, like that's refreshing. That's dope. You know?
It is refreshing. And then to go away and then come back. And to be like, here's Atlanta. And I was like, oh, yeah. But I'm like, that's okay. Donald Glover has a show. Atlanta. Okay, that doesn't make no sense. But Troy from Community, I was still hung up on that. Or like this millennial rap dude. And then last but not least, when Awaken My Love came out, and Questlove did a big long post, and it was the same. I read this that and I thought the same thing. He was like, I clicked on this thing looking for some millennial rap shit, and he came out with some Sly Stone shit.
Exactly.
Like, what's happening? And then the fact that he does that at every turn just sort of confounds us.
Yeah.
You know, subverts our expectations, and while doing that, puts out excellent product.
That's right.
Is pretty insane and dope.
Yeah.
And then so then I went back, and I don't really shut up after this. Then I had to go back and listen to, you know, that first Gambino record, the second Gambino record. And I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to hate on it the whole time.
It holds up.
It's, like, kind of good. And then I went back and started watching some of those videos him and Hero did. I was like, oh, they're, like, doing some Michelle Gondry shit. They're doing some art. And so if I take one large step back and then think of all of that, from sketch comedy to 30 Rock to comedian to album to Community to Atlanta to all this shit to like This Is America to Waking My Love to this new song to Lando
to Spider-Man,
I'm like, where was I?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's definitely masterfully done. I feel like his brother is a huge part of his success. He doesn't really get too much.
No.
Like visibility, but I think that's on purpose too. But I feel
brothers when doing the Paperboy rap, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like though they have an incredible team, and that speaks to, I guess the brain trust philosophy or having like this hive thinking, where you stick to the people that you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You stick with the people that you come up with, and you build that on build upon that chemistry, and that's how you come up with something that's unique and different, because you have that fluidity. It's almost like with Jay-Z. Jay-Z's worked with the same people since he came in the game.
Yep.
That's why he's successful.
Hey.
But hey, I'll tell you another thing that's successful.
Shout out to Todd Emery.
Exactly. another company that's successful is Amazon and Jeff Bezos.
Man.
And they are raking in the money, Joe. Profits have swelled to $1.6 billion.
Damn.
And it's beyond, you know, just them being like the internet shopping destination. It's their cloud computing services and their advertising business. Like, this is a huge thing, man. Like, the fact that they have these huge government contracts. Like, they have Smithsonian. They do all the cloud computing for Smithsonian. The CIA, my man. And now they have a job. They have a bid out to do everything for the military, the whole government, the whole Pentagon.
Weird.
And so, like, the thing that people are upset about is that, like, hey, is it becoming more of a monopoly where this one company has literally 40% of the market of cloud computing?
Yeah.
So will they break them up is the question.
Not with Trump's in office, first of all.
Not with Trump's no, Trump is the biggest like critique of Jeff Bezos.
Well, because he's liberal, but I think that this is right in line with Trump's sort of like, no regulations, let corporations do their thing, like government. And this is, I mean, you know, specifically partisan politics aside, Republicans' identity is based on the idea of that, you know, businesses should be businesses. All these pesky regulations, man. Take all these regulations out. Businesses will police themselves. Let them do that. Let the people decide.
Woo!
Free market. Like, don't have the government do deciding, which is just bullshit.
Uh-oh.
I want safe meat. I want safe roads, you know, but I want safe airplanes. I like the government intervening. But I think that, the Bezos thing is weird to me. I think, well, first of all, this is just goes into this strategy, and then Google has a very similar strategy, it feels like, which is kind of like, it goes something like this. I'm just going to lay in the cut and have this one business, be it YouTube or a bookstore or in Facebook's case, you know, the social network. But really the commodity is data. I'm going to collect all this data from all these different data points from all these different individuals and people, and I'm going to come up with solutions to be able to move that around. And all the solutions that he came up with along the way, the innovations they did in order to be able to sell books and then sell products and then deliver products, all those innovations you had to come up with along the way, allows you to have the most efficient internal thing that's more efficient than anybody else. So the fact that he's like, we're going to take our internal thing and share it with you because our shit is so efficient. I keep going back to the post office. Our shit is so efficient, we can do your job better than you're doing your job, government. Yeah. So why don't you just fuck with us?
Yeah, they created a model. They created the infrastructure to be able to have the fluidity of information. Right. I mean, because it's all about communication and the channel of communication. Because often we talk about government, a lot of it is segmented, and there is no fluidity. It's like you have to go through these different kind of like almost rabbit holes to have a conversation with someone from a different department.
Yeah.
Versus, hey, have something that has the infrastructure that can have that conversation in a more fluid way. And that's what he's been able to do with his Amazon Web Services.
Is he going for the Oracle's head? Like, is Oracle more storage, or is he going for like...
No, storage. Like,
he's going for Oracle.
It's cloud computing. They have 40% of the market.
Damn.
Then this is without the new contract. If they get the Pentagon, it'll push them over 50%.
So Cisco and Oracle, who are giants, they might be going down.
I mean, they're not bigger than Amazon. Amazon is the biggest company in terms of cloud computing.
This is the thing that concerns me with Google and Amazon, and to some extent Facebook. Like, they're so big. Amazon especially, like, has just so many, all these giant centers and data centers and, like, warehouses and, and once they decide to set their sights on whatever business model they want to set their sights on, they can probably do it more efficiently than whoever's doing it.
Man.
Like, when Jeff Bezos like, I'm going to start making cars. Hey. I'm going to make cars for everybody.
Exactly.
Like, Ford, Chevrolet, forget it. I'm going to make cars for everybody. Or... like, I'm going to make microphones now. Like, they have the ability, because right now they're delivering stuff. The next move for Amazon is to start manufacturing stuff.
It's space tourism.
Well, yes, but at a certain point, they can just turn their sights to, why don't we just manufacture the shit and then ship it?
Yeah, make this. All channels of product development and distribution.
Why don't we just buy up all these existing, manufacturer places in China and have them all be Amazon factories?
Yeah, they got the cash flow for it.
And supply and put Walmart out of business. I mean, like, this is the kind of stuff that, like, is weird to me. And what I say to this is, it's all fun and games. Like, the power that, this is my warning I heed that we just don't know what this looks like. The power that Zuckerberg as the 30-year-old has with his company Facebook is all well and good. And Jeff Bezos wields with Amazon and the two guys with Google. It's all well and good as long as they retain the ownership. What happens if a Donald Trump type person? What if like Chris Christie somehow the Koch brothers bought Amazon?
Impossible.
I'm just saying.
It's impossible.
It's too big.
Like, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world, richest person in the world. No one's going to buy it.
As long as Jeff Bezos is running that company with his sort of benevolent, leadership. What if Game of Thrones? What if the wicked? What if Cersei starts running that joint? Or Facebook. What the next person that buys, what someone buys, what some Russian oligarch buys Facebook? I guess they're not for sale, but that's stuff I worry about.
It's too big. I think it's too big to be sold. But I think another interesting point I want to throw at you is, like, okay, in the era of industrialists, when you started looking for like natural resources, like steel. And so, like, hey, I found a piece of land that's giving me all this steel, right? And I'm able to manufacture this. And now I pretty much have ownership of all steel. I could build these railroads and I could build all these buildings. And there's no competition because I own the natural resource.
Right.
But with this, like, he created something with his own brain, intellectual property. Let me figure out how I can change how people shop, how people, distribute information. Like, how is that the same as an industrialist where, like, okay, I own the land that the resources is taking from versus, like, the ownership of this idea came from my brain?
Yeah, it's wild, and these are the new titans, man. This is the new. I mean, the war is not being fought like in natural resources, like steel and iron and gas. Exactly. I mean, all the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and all those people who made all that money, doing all that shit. This is the new. I mean, it's more like hearse. It's more like the hearse from the newspapers,
Exactly.
Because you're trading in information,
right,
and then turning that into an empire,
right?
That is, I mean, the hearses are still paid,
exactly, forever paid. Here's an interesting story, man, I want to throw at you as well. So we talk about all the time on the show Uber, its ups and downs, its peaks and valleys, how sophisticated it once was, and even how it's trying to innovate now. But one thing that's really interesting is, like, man, all these accusations of sexual assault and abuse by Uber drivers. We're talking about over 100 where it's situational, where a woman, typically a woman, will be in an Uber. It might be drugs or alcohol involved. But like a woman will either pass out in the Uber and wake up in a place that's unfamiliar, or it'll be maybe a situation where even the Uber driver is forcing himself on her. Like, this is some crazy stuff. Yeah. So my question is, like, how from a company, what company perspective should there be with stuff like this? Like, how as a company do you remain clean when your I can't even say employees, people that use your platform as a driver are committing these crimes?
Yeah, it's almost like this is some of the dangers of a giant sort of crowd. This is stuff that they didn't anticipate when you have Uber, and then you have you reach your company, you get these drivers, and the verification problem. When Uber grows at the rate it grew, and you're in, like almost 50 states and like, 500, 600 cities and, thousands more around the world, all these drivers, like, how do you possibly vet every single driver? You don't have the infrastructure to keep an eye on all these drivers. Now, they have the God eye and all that stuff. Exactly. But you don't do that. But to me, so it is a problem. It's a problem, and that's something you have to figure out when you grow that large. How do you keep an eye on those people? How do you vet all these people? Because, you have a situation where you have, it's a numbers game. You're like Walmart. You have thousands and thousands of employees, Exactly. And they're all like Uber drivers. They're not like, and then you can't roll with like, hey, there's independent contractors. I don't know these guys. No, you brand them as your drivers. Right. Your whole thing is like, ride with me because we give you a safe ride.
Right.
And then we vetted these drivers and approved it. And then it's like this one story. It's where a girl, she passed out and woke up with a driver on top of her.
No good.
Like, that's
all bad.
Like, you take an Uber because you're drunk and you want to be safe.
Right.
You put your address out. Your friend puts you in an Uber. Like that. The time you put me in an Uber. Like, get him home. And what if you woke up and I was like, damn, Akili, I got raped. Wow.
That's horrible.
I was passed out. That's terrible. Horrible. But here's the thing, though. The other thing I'll say about Uber is, I mean, the fish rots from the head, man. Uber has so many, systemic, problems with their C-suite and with their their management, and it's all like all this harassment and all this like good old boys club and all this frat boy stuff and all the horrible things that the culture of Uber seems to be, maybe they're changing now, but seems to be that was really
I can't say that it's a Uber centric situation, because it's happening with Lyft as well. It's happening with other ride sharing apps. But I think obviously because Uber has the bad rap and has the long history of just bad shit happening, like they're getting kind of like hit with most of the attention.
But it's unfortunate that after all of that stuff, and then it's like, oh, and their drivers are raping people. Like, figures.
Exactly.
That's how Uber does it.
Man, that's so bad.
That's really horrible for them. So I don't know. I Uber's also big, but I don't know. I have instincts that Uber doesn't turn this shit around. Their PR over this last year is just slamming.
I'll tell you how they are turning it around. They have a lot of other shit that they're doing that's not for just commercial, direct, B2C type of stuff, like business to consumer type of stuff. Beyond transportation in cities, they're also trying to develop stuff in the aerospace industry. And so they've teamed up with NASA, and they have a service called Uber Air where they're trying to move rides to the sky.
Right.
And so they partnered with the U.S. Army, their research arm, and also, like I said, NASA to make that happen. And I think this is more so future-facing, obviously. They're hoping to have this concept of Uber Air brought to market within the next 5 years, and they want to be able to fly vehicles at least 2,000 feet up and go about 150 miles per hour, and able to travel about 60 miles. And so, the question is like an inverse of what we were talking about. This is like a good way of implementing this technology, or implementing how you can disrupt transportation, not only through vehicles, autonomous, and they're also trying to do it with autonomous vehicles, but now they're trying to take that into the sky.
Sure.
What do you think?
I think that this is great. I feel like ultimately Uber is going to be, I think in 10 years, Uber will be out of the rideshare business. I mean, they won't be out of the rideshare business because they'll be autonomous. They'll have autonomous cars. And so I think that Uber probably is thinking like, let's just ride this out, because pretty soon all these drivers will be out here anyway because we'll be have autonomous cars or whatever. Or we're not staying in this business much longer because we have other fish to fry.
Right.
I really wonder, Uber is one of those words,
it's part of lexicon.
Like Kleenex and Q-tip. That is I'm going to Uber somewhere.
Yeah.
Uber me, wherever you're going. So I don't know, man. I think I like where Uber is going as a company. I just really hope they have the leadership to take them there. And I really hope that they can just shake all of this. Like, if I hear one more thing with Uber and misconduct, or Uber and sex, or Uber and rape, it's like, how many of these stories I got to read?
Yeah.
You know, then it's like, oh, the drivers are, they have 113 cases of you know, it's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, hey, I mean, I hear that point. You know, I echo that out as well. But I do like what they're trying to do now. They're trying to push with the innovation, especially like in developing like the Uber Air. It's like they have like, it's almost like a helicopter, but yeah, they've developed something that makes it quieter. Because if you're going to have all these in the city, like we don't want to be hearing all this noise pollution. So the technology is like, how can we have all this
whisper mode?
Pretty much, essentially. So that's what they're developing with the Uber Air. How they can have something that's quiet, something that can, you know, easily land and easily, you know, deploy, and do it in mass and scale. And so I'm interested to see, you know, if they're able to come up with that. You think that that's plausible in the next 5 years?
I mean, like, well, as we've seen with Amazon, once you have enough capital and you spend enough money in R&D, you make a commitment that, like, we're going to spend, this is where the company's going, we're going to do this while doing this. I mean, I think anything's possible. I mean, these companies are so big. And they're figuring out a way to just sustain and grow this business over here while still having enough capital to innovate and create new areas of business. That's the way that's just growth 101.
That's right.
Amazon and Google are just very, very, been very playing the long game with all this stuff, man. And I think that Uber could do that too.
Hell yeah. So. Well, I'll tell you another company that is trying to get more leverage, and that is, it's actually two companies, Sprint and T-Mobile. What carrier do you have, phone carrier?
I have
Verizon.
Verizon.
Yeah, I'm Verizon as well. So yes. The story is Sprint and T-Mobile, try this once. They're trying to essentially become one company. There are four major carriers, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile. And the bottom two are Sprint and T-Mobile, Sprint being the lowest. And so, hey, they're saying we want to join forces because it'll add more competition to the top two, which are AT&T and Verizon. Right. And the government has once said before, though, that would be creating a monopoly, and it would actually not make it more competitive, it would make it less competitive.
Right.
And so they said, well, let's try it again. So do you think that'll happen this time?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
What? Wow, that surprises me.
I do.
Tell me why.
I just go back to Trump, man. It is now is the time. It is a business friendly time. The only thing that works against their favor is because Trump is, you know, was such a dick about blocking, you know, trying to block the other merger, the AOL, you know, the Warner Brothers that merger, because he hates CNN.
Right.
So that it'll be hard for him to sort of say this is fine when that isn't fine. But I just sort of say, like, it's just money, and it's like, even these just giant corporate sort of like business first, consumer last moves. Every time I hear like the consumer's the loser, like I have zero faith that like this Trump administration is going to be like, oh, that the consumer's the loser? Well, let's not do that. It's like business. And so, yeah, I think it could happen. But you know the big winner on this merger would be?
Who's that?
The big winner. It's the Can You Hear Me Now guy.
Stop it.
Because he was at T-Mobile.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then he went to Sprint. And Verizon. Now he's going to be like, yeah. Oh, it is right. Verizon. That's right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So now he's going to be like chilling.
Man, he's like, yeah, I work for all four. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't want this to happen. I'm not to be just a super cynical thing, but I don't.
I mean, but do you think if it did happen, say it did happen, is that going to affect our bottom line? Say we're Team Verizon, right? We've been Verizon for years. Is that going to affect what we pay? Is it going to make the prices go up? Like...
It depends on what T-Mobile and Sprint do to stay competitive. If they say, all right, we're going for the heads of Verizon and AT&T, and we're offering some crazy deal because we're merged now. We have the ability to just lower our prices and try to like.
But they're already lower. There's, like Sprint has the lowest out of all four.
And
like,
also the crappiest service, the crappiest customer service. But anyway, but let's say they really come out their heads. Does Verizon try to meet that? Do they go down? Do they say, oh, we can match you? I don't know.
No, I think because of what you said, terrible customer service, terrible service in general. Yeah. It's like, I mean, you gotta have those things to like kind of like determine your price point. Like, if the shit sucks, like, why am I gonna pay more for it?
Man, my last Sprint deal like 4 years ago was the worst thing I ever did in my life, and it was in the iPhone. It was the worst with the iPhone. It was the worst. It was all bad.
It was all bad.
Anyway, but yeah, we'll see. I, you know, when it says, when I read this and it says, Sprint, you know, Sprint seems to be headed towards a battle with antitrust regulators. Well, who are these antitrust regulators? Maybe the people who want to deregulate everything.
Right.
So I have a little faith in that, but we'll see. Maybe.
All right. Hey.
Maybe the country's running in a way that I don't think it's running.
There it is. Interesting story coming up from Instagram. So Instagram is upgrading its offensive comment filter today. So what that means is that you, Joe, cannot make insensitive comments on my Instagram page anymore. So if you do, like, it'll be filtered out. You know, no one will be able to see it. I won't be able to see it.
What is insensitive?
So, like, if you're saying something that's toxic or racially insensitive or sexually insensitive,
is this being monitored by humans? Is it an algorithm?
It's an algorithm that automatically finds keywords and says, "Nah, you can't say shit like that on our platform."
But is it like a keyword like fuck or like a bad word? Is
I don't think it, like, I don't think it's a profane.
Kill that nigger.
Yeah, I think it's more like that. Whoa.
So I got possessed.
Like, right. Like, where did that come from? Whoa! Jeez. Anywho, Instagram will be filtering
you out. Figure out. What?
My gosh! What's also dope about the filtering is that it's going to launch in multiple languages. So it's not just English, but it's Spanish, Portuguese, Arabic, German, Russian, French, and Japanese. And I think it's pretty cool. I mean, like, do you think this is... I mean, we talked about many times, especially, you know... When the election was being hacked with bots and all that stuff, and
right,
having that technology being able to like say like salacious and demeaning type of stuff on Twitter and on Facebook, like having this type of thing, I think keeps the platform pure. It has, to some degree, you want purity. You want people to feel safe. You want people to feel like they won't be insulted or attacked. But on the flip side of the coin, you want to be able to have the freedom to say what you want to say. Where do you stand on it?
I'm really divided on this one. I'm already like on the fence of like there's a bunch of humans sitting there being like, oh, this is offensive, because there's a sliding scale. I mean, some things are obviously offensive, but you know, there's some things that are said in jokes or said in jest. So
like contextual, right?
Some things are contextual, and I don't know that humans. I certainly don't trust an algorithm to be able to get sort of sarcasm or context or, you know, tongue-in-cheek. Or, I mean, sometimes it's hard to say that they're just going to filter out stuff. It reminds me of, you know, this latest season of Black Mirror, episode 2, has a really great episode about that, where you can put a filter in your child's, so at Jahi at this stage, you can put, like, a little chip inside his brain. And anything that like he sees that it's got, so he sees a spider or a snake and he's like, ah, like you can dial it down and like
it turns into something else, a flower.
No, it doesn't. It just blurs it out. Oh. So if the snake is like, rah, and he's like, ah, it's like blurred. He's like, oh, okay. and the unintended consequences of this is this person goes through a whole adolescence and has no, she's almost like a sociopath.
Right.
Because people are like hitting each other with blood. She can't see blood. She can't see anything.
Right.
And
that's crazy.
So anyway, the point is that like that's kind of like the unintended consequences. You can't filter out the world.
Wow.
So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm all for filtering out bullying comments. I'm all for not getting bullied on Instagram or Twitter or any of that shit. But
I think that's more. I don't think it's like a general.
Where does it end?
I don't think it's a general Band-Aid for that. I think it's just like, hey, if you're saying something that is like clearly in attack mode,
right?
Like you can't have that on the platform. So. I think I don't know how it works. Maybe we need to do more investigation on our end.
Yeah.
But I think it will have some type of flexibility in what it filters out and doesn't filter out. Because that would suck if I can't tell you I'm gonna beat you up when I'm just playing.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. It's like a filter. It's a little gargle. Right. Exactly. What did Achilles say?
Right.
That's my concern. It's like I don't, you know.
Hey man, well your boy Warren Buffett, man.
If I do my classic joke, kill that nigger.
All right, Doc. I can't take it anymore. I'm serious. Holy smokes. We are on fire
it's
today.
Contextual. All right,
anyway, man, your boy Warren Buffett is spending money, man.
Hey, he's got to spend.
man, he's investing. He already invested and bought 75 million shares of Apple, my man. That is huge, and it's going to push them to be the first company. Apple is going to be the first company to cross the threshold of $1 trillion market capitalization. Now, you know this. You know Buffett is pretty pretty much a sniper in this game.
Savvy investor.
He's been doing it for decades. And yeah, man, like
you could do worse. You put your money where he's putting his money, you could do worse in life.
So, I guess my question is like, so Apple's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Why is he doing it now? Especially when Apple was not killing it like it's done in previous years.
I think that he knows something that we don't know because he's Warren Buffett, and that's kind of his job to know that. I think that he is reading the tea leaves onto Apple's next move, which is a content move. I mean, they're primarily in the hardware business, hardware, and they're also in the consumer electronic business, you know, with iPhones. But their next move is content. They are really going to try to be they're coming for Netflix, and they're coming for Hulu, and they're coming for everyone else. So, looking at the brand, looking at the investment that they need to make and want to make in that space, looking at their penetration they already have in international as a brand and goodwill, you would think that once they roll out their version of Netflix, it's going to kill, especially if they have some good programming. And I think that they're really trying to see to do that. So I think that Warren Buffett is really betting on that next evolution because if someone told Warren Buffett that, like, hey, you should bet on this small DVD rental place called Netflix, you know, but because they're going to grow to be the largest, you know, sort of network, you know, and subscription service in history and change the entire game, he would have done it. So someone now is saying, hey, Apple's getting in that game.
Well, I just saw a video of him because the interviewer asked him, like, well, how come you passed on Amazon or how come you passed on Facebook? And he was like, because he couldn't see it. He couldn't see how it would evolve and develop and be such a, I guess, a penetrating force in the landscape.
Back then, you mean?
Yeah, back then.
Oh, yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible to see. Yeah.
I mean.
I'm saying, like, you know, I guess what my scenario was, if he had a bird to show, if he can go back in time and do that with those companies, not just Netflix, I think now he sees, like, shit. I know what this looks like. I know where this game is going. And you tell me that Apple's is, and Tim Cook is like, no, we about to kill it, bro. We about to really kill it. And Warren Buffett's like, shit.
All right, let me get on board.
Get on board then. And I think that that's what this is about. So I think that like that's a good sign. And I would suggest that we all buy some stock in Apple.
Hey man, well we ain't buying 75 million shares though.
We are not buying 75 million shares.
And he said, I'm still not done buying. I'm gonna buy aggressively some more shares, but at a different time.
Yeah.
So like the amount that he bought, he owns 4% of Apple now. He owns 4% of it. That's crazy.
Wow. Good for him.
Good for him.
Too bad his kids, and that's his kids don't. He's not leaving any money to his kids either.
Exactly.
Every time next
he only paid for their college.
The kids are like, damn.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. Anywho, man, I don't know if you caught this, though. This is really cool. Google has developed a program that can pass as artificial intelligence can pass as a human voice on the phone. But, like, literally, it sounds like a human. So they did a demonstration where the AI called and essentially made a hair appointment. And like literally the AI was having a conversation with the person that was, you know, taking the appointment, whatever. And like all the nuances, like doing like, doing all sorts of stuff like that. Like, but like perfectly timed, the intonations were right. And then they also did one where he called, I think it's like a Chinese restaurant. He's trying to make a reservation. And like the lady who answered the phone didn't speak that, you know, very good English or whatever. And so she was like, what are you, like, there was like a discrepancy of what the AI was trying to say and what she was interpreting. And the AI still figured out a way to have the conversation.
Wow.
So
switch to Cantonese.
So people are kind of in an uproar because it's like, hey, if we've reached this part of the technology where we can't even distinguish if this voice we're hearing on the phone is a real person or a robot, like, that could be really scary. Like, so, like, how do we regulate that? That's the question.
It's very scary. You talk about these robocalls as they exist. You talk about, like, election stuff. I don't know, man. It's just, it's really scary. I think, I don't know how you regulate that. I don't know how do you say, I feel like that they should say this is an AI person.
Right, notify it from the jump.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, there's gonna be plenty of people who just will only want to know, they'll be able to talk to their AI person. I mean, like, right. What's the next evolution of this? Of course, is Google Assistant.
Right.
That is like can just have a full conversation with
that's
you.
That's right. It'll I be mean, like, what's our movie?
Her.
Her. Exactly.
Yeah. That's kind of what's next. And if you have. Like this is where AI is like really so close to like connecting all these dots, because if you have a Watson that can solve anything or ask any questions, and then you put a real voice, and then you figure out a way for them to read human responses and then calculate what a response should be based on the hundreds of thousands of options, and they can do it in 1 second, like the human brain can do,
or faster than the human brain,
in multiple languages. I mean, what are we talking about here? This is really
so. Should we develop it where, it notifies you before you hop on the call? Hey, I'm an AI. I'm not human. Or should it have like a robotic voice?
No, I think it's fine because this is where we're going to have the human voice. But you should know that you're not talking to a real person.
Dang.
I think you should know. And I think that, and frankly, I don't think people are going to care.
Really?
I think people are just lonely. People are lonely. Like, oh, really? What are you doing? You know, robo or whatever. And they'll just have a conversation. I mean,
So if you had, you could have a surrogate Joe Braswell voice. Go handle that meeting for me.
Yeah.
Go pitch that product. Go pitch that TV show real quick.
I'm busy, bro. I'm busy. How'd it go? How'd it go? Show me the data.
Like, no, stop it. You fucked up the pitch, man.
Oh, what did it say? Shit. I should do it myself. Yeah. I mean, that's where we're headed. I mean, damn. I don't know. This whole thing is like, I just don't know that. I actually didn't see the demonstration. I think is there.
Oh, you gotta watch it.
This video, of the demonstration.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta watch it. Like it is. It's just scary to me. I think it's amazing technology. I just wow. We're just getting closer and closer to singularity, man. We're getting closer and closer to that Matrix moment, to that Cyberdyne Skynet moment, man. And then what's gonna happen,
man? For real,
you know, when AI starts talking to each other and talking to other computers around the world, and they start like making their own calculations,
exactly.
Like these guys are expendable. Right. Like,
we don't need you.
Yeah, and they can start manufacturing, synthetic humans on their own.
Yeah,
because that's all be automated at some point too. 3D printing stuff.
That's right.
Like what?
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Elon Musk says we got to be careful.
Elon Musk knows what he's talking about,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, be careful.
I watched too much Terminator 2 and much Matrix to not be afraid.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's really dope, and that is a podcast on AfterBuzz TV. And the podcast is called Conversation with Maria Menounos, Podcast Edition. And it drops every Friday on iTunes. And it's a really, really great podcast because it features celebrity and influencer interviews. And it gives you like incredible tips on how to be better and evolve in all aspects of your life. And we're talking about from health to wellness to finance to your career, relationships, and a bunch more. It's like having Maria as your big sister or mentor. Yep. And like she just gets in there and like really opens you up and like gets you to envision things that you didn't necessarily know. I think it's a great podcast. So I would encourage everyone to go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos. It's free. Be sure to rate and comment. And when you do, let them know that Maria let them know that Maria told us we sent you there. And check out Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition. It's really, really, really awesome.
Jane of all trades, also another slash or polymath, host, actress, author, producer, CEO. Like she's got a lot to offer. So yeah, check it out.
It's good. Yes, sir. So are you hip to Cobra Kai?
Yes.
Karate Kid.
I haven't.
YouTube Red.
I haven't peeped it yet, but I'm probably gonna peep it like this weekend.
Okay.
Or like I got friends that everybody who's my age who watched it sort of said that they binged it in like a day or a weekend.
Do they like it?
They love it.
Okay.
I mean, people are like, it's really just a testament to where YouTube Red is going, because it's they spent some money. It looks like a Netflix show. It doesn't feel like some YouTube,
thing. Yeah, I saw the trailers. It looked pretty cool.
But I think that the where they've gone with these characters, which is basically sort of like their best years were their glory days of high school.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of just a couple dudes in the valley.
Yeah.
Which is, we all know those dudes in the valley.
Exactly.
I love it. And I also love... I haven't spent so much time in the San Fernando Valley. I do like seeing San Fernando Valley like in the 80s and seeing it now. And it's interesting, yeah.
Well, this article was dope to me because it posed the question, like, well, at least for me, like growing up in the 80s, like the movies that, you know, resonated with me were not animations. They were like real live action films, like E.T., like The Karate Kid, like Indiana Jones, versus now this generation and previous generations, like they grow up watching cartoons essentially that have more of a comical, silly type of stance, versus this had serious tone, dealt with issues, and you were able to absorb that as a kid. Do you think that kids these days are missing out on dope content like this?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're not, I don't know what that, well, we do have the whole YA revolution, you know, the Maze Runners and Hunger Games and all that stuff. But, I don't know. I feel like there's, in Twilight, so there is some material that comes out of books that are aimed at sort of preteens and teens. But nothing that, like, The Karate Kid was a movie that was, I don't know if that movie gets made today, because it's a movie that's not necessarily for adults. But it's a super heavy thing, you know.
Well, the one with Jaden got made recent.
It
recent
did a remake,
times.
But I guess what I'm thinking about, like, you know, because of the reboot of that. But I'm saying, what's this generation's Karate Kid? What is a movie that is basically starring a bunch of, even Goonies for that matter? What's a movie where it's basically starring or Lost Boys?
Exactly.
Where it's a bunch of kids,
right?
But the material is presented as if it's for adults. But frankly, if you're 40 years old or 30 years old,
it would be Stranger Things. But even you can't really.
But
even
that's
say
all
that.
Nostalgic. That's built for guys.
Exactly. Who, from our
area. The those kids in Stranger Things are the exact same age as me.
That's true.
Like in age wise and everything. Right. So I look at that like, yep, in 1983, that's exactly what I was doing. But so I'm old. But I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I don't know the kind of, because I think about The Karate Kid, that's a movie that was for kids. But like I say, if you're at the time, if you're, you know, 40 years old, you're not going to go see The Karate Kid. You're taking your kids to see The Karate Kid. If you're 35, you're not going to see The Karate Kid. Right. 30. You know, you saw The Karate Kid if you're like 15.
Yeah.
And because your parents took you or you went to go see The Karate Kid. It's a different model. We're not really making films like that for that generation or even, you know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to agree with that. But because like,
but give me an example.
So like E.T., that wasn't for adults?
Yeah.
It's the same type of thing. Same type of premise. Like it's clearly like the protagonists are kids.
Well, yeah,
but it's entertainment for everybody.
Let me recalibrate that. What I'm saying is they're making these movies that work for that are adult themes, but work for they're aimed at kids with adult themes. And
right,
they work across the board.
Right,
you know the way Pixar puts a bunch of jokes in for parents. You know, but like,
or would that kind of be like the Avengers? It does both.
Yeah, I think that's probably the closest thing to that, because that's pretty, like, you know, like, those are clearly for kids, but those are, like, very serious, dark movies with consequences. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that would be an example of that. But, like, outside of the superhero universe, I mean, what are we talking about?
You're right. That's true.
Where's our Karate Kid?
That's true.
And nostalgia's huge, and, you know, bringing all this stuff back, and, you know, look, our Generation X, I want to see all that shit back.
Bring it all back. You know? That's my next question to you. So, like, this model that a lot of the streaming platforms are doing now, where they're taking legacy content or nostalgic content that was once, like, released as a movie, as a standalone, and they're making it serialized, making it episodic. Do you think that this strategy, I mean, clearly we've seen this strategy multiple times in the last few years, but do you think this is something we'll begin to see more and more of?
Yes. I mean, because it's working.
Yeah.
It's just flat out working, you know, whether you're bringing back things.
But like Ghostbusters didn't really work.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's an execution issue. Right. I mean, that could have worked.
But that wasn't serialized, so that's not a good example.
Yeah, but even like whether you're bringing back old shows like Will and Grace and Roseanne and which are hits, or you're taking movies and then taking that subject matter and stretching it out into something new.
Right.
I mean that all works, man. Yeah. I feel like that's a smart business. I mean as a, you know, child of baby boomers and having my pop culture adolescence be just watching a bunch of baby boomer nostalgia, like how many like shit about the 50s and I had to watch in the 70s and the 60s and the 90s, you know, in the 90s and like, you know, in Vietnam and had a whole like 30 movies on Vietnam and 30 movies on the 60s and hippies, and in the 70s it was all American Graffiti and Happy Days, and like, so I mean, the nostalgia is not new, like people want to bring that back, and right now it's all about the right now, frankly, it's all about the 90s, not even the 80s anymore, it's really all about the 90s.
It's true.
So yeah, I mean, you'll see more and more of this. Just by my house, they opened up the Save by the Max, the Save by the Bell Cafe.
Wow.
You know, and it's like packed out. You can't even get in there.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, so that's, you know, so I think it's great. I think we'll see a lot more of it because it's smart business until it always boils down to the execution. If you told me they were going to bring back the Karate Kid on YouTube, make it a series, I was like, I'm like, nah.
Right.
But apparently the execution is great.
Hey, tell me, do you think that this execution is great? So DC, I don't know if you heard, but they're announcing their own streaming service, and they're calling it the DC Universe. Is this something that will work? I mean, we're going to see properties like the Titans, maybe Supergirl, maybe even Superman on there. Do you think that this, I mean, obviously they're trying to still, they're trying to compete against, you know, Marvel and Disney having their own streaming platform. Do you think that this platform is attractive? Do you think they have the right intellectual property that it'll work?
It remains to be seen. But just so I'm clear, we talk about live action stuff.
Live action and animation. Like they have a live action one for Titans. They have a Swamp Thing coming.
Titans. That's my shit.
Yeah,
I love Teen Titans.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know about this, but yeah, I want to see kind of like, I know you're super heavy into comics.
Yeah. It's been an execution. I feel like that the DC universe has done a fantastic job on television with Greg Berlanti, like the way they've done that. Although I don't always agree with sort of like their approach, but I mean, you can't argue with Green Arrow, Flash, Legends, Supergirl. Those are all hits. Black Lightning.
But define a hit though. Define a hit when you go across the river to Marvel Land. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but all those are like hit television shows.
Okay,
those are like bona fide hit television shows with huge fan bases and profitable hit television shows. On the feature side, the whole, you know, the Zack Snyderverse is a disaster. So hopefully they can sort of clean that up. But yeah, I think that they have the properties. It's all about execution. It's very similar to what, you know, the way Marvel did their Netflix shows. Like, those are all excellent, with the exception of Iron Fist, and they're all excellent. And I thought, like, you know, you got most of them.
I was signed up for season one of most of them, but then like these season twos, I'm like, whatever. Like
the Jessica Jones,
man,
I haven't watched it yet.
Well, it's like whatever.
Okay. All right, I really like Jessica Jones season one. I haven't got season two, but their initial run, they've done a good job.
And for
sure. So if DC, I feel like DC is looking at the Netflix version of that, which is streaming, and saying, we own these properties, let's try to do that.
What I'm saying is, are you going to pay $5, $10 just for this?
If they move all, I mean, look, if I'm a fan and they moved all, if the only place I could watch Supergirl, Flash, Green Arrow, all that shit, the only place I could watch it was there, and they took it off of CW, and took it off, you know, then, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and they continue to come with all this stuff. I think there's a market for that.
So we talk about cutting the cord and, you know, having a monthly payment in terms of the content that you have access to, and not having a cable, right? Not having cable, mm-hmm. not paying $60 to $100 a month. So like, hey, so you're gonna have a DC streaming platform, you're gonna have a Marvel streaming platform, you're gonna pay for all this shit?
I don't know, man.
that's just comics, dog.
Yeah. This decisions have to be made at some point. I mean, look, back in the old days, I mean, you know, you're playing cable, and my cable, at one point, my cable was like $179. And I was like, why is my cable $179 a month? What is happening?
You got every channel.
Like, what is going on? So now it's way down that I've cut cords, but who knows? By the time I get done with all this shit, it may be built back up. So I don't know. You have choices to make, but that's the key word there is choice.
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 Choice. Choice and choice. So what are you saying? What are you forecasting with Solo, Star Wars Story? You think it's going to be a smasher?
I don't know. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a good movie. Well, I don't know if it's going to be a smasher in terms of that. It's weird. I think everyone's going to go see it. I think it's going to be a good movie. I think Rod Howard doesn't really make bad movies. I think The Ancient Han Solo, it's written by Lawrence Kasdan, who basically created the modern version of Han Solo. Like, all the stuff in Empire Strikes Back is Kasdan. So, I mean, yeah, like, I think everything's right. I don't really love the lead. I don't really love the guy who's playing Han Solo, but maybe he'll win me over. I'm rooting for it. It's hard to say. I guess where I'm at is it's going to be a good movie. Whether or not fans come out and like make it another record breaker, or if it does the business that even Rogue One did, But that's what that's the barometer. Can these, because really we're talking about, what we're talking about is can these star not Star Wars movies survive? This is the second of a Star Wars story.
Right.
Rogue One was one.
Right.
Solo's another. They want to keep doing them. Exactly. They want to figure them all out and keep doing these stuff because they want more franchises. So the real thing is, will it do as well as Rogue One?
If it does,
then we're in business. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with those sentiments completely. I feel like that is a barometer. It has to at least match that. I mean, I think if it goes below that, it's not going to be a good look, especially with, you know, record breaking movies of Black Panther and, you know, the Avengers. It has to have some type of momentum to carry it to the next one. And so I hope that, you know, it has all the things that we like about Star Wars integrated in its DNA. But yeah, man, I mean, I'm excited to see it. Like, I'm excited to see, you know, our boy. Just like we started the show talking about Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
I guess we can end it that way, too. Do you think that he, playing the role of Lando, do you think that he is going to destroy this character? Is he going to kill it?
Man, he's going to kill it. Like, I can't even think of a more perfect casting. Like, anywhere to say a young Lando Calrissian and you got Donald Glover. I mean, couldn't be more perfect. And I remember 2 years ago when he got announced that they had that picture of him in some New York coffee shop with him and Billy Dee, like, having a coffee. Like, so he's doing the research. He's doing, like, you know, and Billy Dee is far from Lando these days. I mean, he's far from Billy Dee.
Right.
But when Billy Dee was popping in the 70s and 80s, like, there was no cooler motherfucker around. So I think that capturing the essence of Lando is just sort of like an indescribable level of cool.
Yeah,
it was just like a Superfly cool. The cape, the voice, like, it was that's like 90% of the character.
I know,
you know, and so I think he can do that. I think he can really do that.
So the article was arguing that, hey, it should really be, you know, the Lando movie, you know, because I guess his character, his story arc is more dynamic in terms of just like how he kind of went from being the smuggler to being, you know, a government administrator to, you know, being the people's savior, the people's champ, essentially.
General Calrissian.
Exactly. So would that be on your wish list?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's gonna happen. I mean,
really?
It's a stone cold lock that, you know, they'll do another it remains to be seen whether they'll do another Solo movie,
right?
If the next one will be Solo, and people are saying the next one will be Solo and Lando, and then we'll go to Lando or whatever. Like, we want to see, you know, people want this to be a trilogy. They want to make it from a Han and Chewie movie into more like a Han and Lando movie,
right?
Sort of like more of a buddy thing,
exactly.
So we'll see. Could Lando get a standalone movie and carry it and people see it? Absolutely. I mean, I think that especially in the wake of Black Panther,
for sure.
You know, you get like a Ryan Coogler to come direct Lando. Yeah. Shit. You know, what are we talking about? Like that's where it's at. So
that would be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like that. I think that after even execs at this point after Black Panther. And then Luke Cage, the success of Luke Cage on TV and Black Panther. I think that, like,
Black Lightning,
people are like, yo, who else we got black? Who's black? Right. You know, now let's make up somebody black. Because, you know.
Hey, well, I think you nailed it into the wood on that one. I'm excited to see the movie. So we will obviously give you our reviews when we see it on the show. But I think that kind of wraps it for us, man. Where can the people find you?
On Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell.
Yes, sir.
And filtered out comments.
Oh, no. Triple filter.
Yeah, I won't say that again.
Y'all can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. As always, we appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. Please comment, and we will see you and talk with you next week.
Peace.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.